afternoon. We're back with another episode of the Sean Mo Hoops podcast. And this time we are doing something for the first time. Unfortunately, do not have any guests. So I will be chatting for 30 to 45 minutes. Hopefully, definitely no longer than that, all about college basketball. So I'm sure my monotone voice might put some people to sleep, but I'll try to keep it entertaining just to give everybody a taste of what can be expected. Going to go through some of the games last week. Currently, this is Tuesday night. Louisville's up 45-32. So we'll definitely talk some Duke, UNC, UVA, ACC. A lot of good basketball games this week, finally. Some good ones coming up. We'll go through a little buy-sell on some of the mid-major teams, go through the rookies of the year at this point, and then the favorite article, or my favorite article of the week in college basketball. So to kick things off, was planning on talking about, can anybody beat Duke? And right now, Louisville is looking like they did against UNC at UNC, and they're up double digits right now, but I don't think that really changes anything going into the game. Duke was an 8-point favorite, but that was a nice spot, at least as of now, not to jinx it, in terms of taking the points at home. Duke coming off a huge road win at UVA on Saturday, the game of the week, really dominated the game and proved to everybody that they are the top team. And especially in the ACC, that was kind of a 2-3 team race entering the weekend is now definitely a 1-team race. I know Duke still has 2 games against UNC, which they could split, but definitely don't see UNC winning both of them. And instead, Duke took Virginia to the woodshed. At Virginia, where they rarely lose, although Duke has had good success, this time with Trey Jones, 81-71. They start off the game hot. Once again, they shot 13 of 21 from the three-point line. Duke was coming in shooting around 31%. Worst shooting three-point team that Coach K has had. And what do? Come in and R.J. Barrett, who's shooting 31%, just starts off on fire. He ends up going 6-for-10. Virginia never really got it going. They definitely made it interesting at the end of the first half, cutting it to 39-35. But their usual lockdown defense had trouble, especially with, I mean, anybody's going to have trouble with the outside shooting that they had. But when they needed stops, they couldn't get them. Offensively, they shot, 28-for-60 from the field, but 10-24 from the three-point line, 41%. But they really, I mean, it looked, Duke has 3 top-5 players plus Trey Jones. UVA has DeAndre Hunter, so they do have a potential lottery guy, which is not usual. And then you have Ty Jerome, but it did look like NBA players playing against college players. And in this game, I think a lot of people thought that UVA would be able to get revenge and take back their home court, but instead, Duke kind of proved to everybody that they are the top team and definitely going to be really difficult to upend come March Madness. Now, right now, they're not looking great, but I think that's more due to the emotional state of college athletes winning a big game on Saturday and then having to go once again into a very hostile atmosphere at Louisville and play a team that is really tough, really long, and they have enough offense to get things done with Jordan Nwora shooting from the outside and Christian Cunningham, being a very, very solid playmaker. So right now down 48-32. So we'll see what happens, but not expecting them to win. It kind of defeats me talking about can anyone beat Duke. But once again, with those guys and with Zion, who had kind of maybe the moment of the year, really the block of the year when he jumped from a good 6-7 feet out and blocked DeAndre Hunter, who I think thought he had plenty of time to get his 3-point shot off. But unfortunately, it turned into a very popular image on social media. One last kind of Duke UVA thought. It was very interesting to watch the coaching kind of chess match that went on of really the beginning, Duke switching everything, and you had Bolden out on the perimeter guarding Guy and Jerome, and that kind of got UVA out of their offense, trying to go one-on-one, which is definitely not their game, and kind of had them flustered at the beginning. But it wouldn't surprise me to see these guys battling in the ACC championship and potentially later down the road. So staying in the ACC, UVA, 10-point loss on Saturday. They turn around Monday night, and they go into Chapel Hill. They have had their recent success against UNC, winning the past few, but it had been almost 2 years since they last played in Chapel Hill. At this point in time, both Kyle Guy and Ty Jerome were only freshmen. This was their first trip to Chapel Hill, and it was an ugly game for UVA. They lost 65-41, shot 2 for 20 from the three-point line, and Jerome and Guy went a combined 0-for-11. Needless to say, that was against the future NCAA champion Tar Heels in 2017, and this matchup was a lot different. UVA jumped out, you know, after the first few minutes, UVA jumped out to the lead and really put on a dominant first half performance. They shut off any driving lane that UNC had, and UNC kept it close. You know, the first few shots they hit were three pointers, but these weren't three pointers like Duke right on the line. They were NBA three pointers. Kenny Williams hit a few. Kobe White was getting into the action, but the paint was relatively shut off. The first close basket they got was Cam Johnson basically having a layup, but missing a shot before he got fouled due to getting hurried. And offensively, UVA was running their very efficient half-court set, going off off ball screens, getting separation from Guy and Jerome on the perimeter. Big men, I don't know if it's a moving screen, but definitely altering the defender's path in a very smart and sneaky way that never gets called. But needless to say, you know, UNC closed the gap at the half, but at the end, it was UVA was on the road and they were looking like the dominant team. In comes UNC the second half. All of a sudden, they start switching everything. Once again, get UVA a little out of sorts. They start hitting some shots from the outside. Kobe White starts penetrating. And really, he was the only guy, you know, on UNC that can penetrate. And then in turn, he played the whole second half. He wore down, didn't really have a great shooting game, had an 89 offensive rating, 3-for-11 from the field, 6-of-19 overall. So it was a far, far, far cry from his Miami performance, 33 points, hitting, I believe, 7 threes in a row. And, you know, it really came down to a few plays at the end. Kobe White's three was waved off. That, yes, it was lucky, but it did go in, would have put UVA down three. And definitely changed the momentum of the game because UVA came, got the next basket, and didn't really look back. But when I was watching the game, I had 49-43. I wrote it down at the time. UNC's up six, has the momentum. They've got UVA playing a little faster than they want to play, not as efficient as they normally play on either end. And 49-43, Kobe White takes a very tough shot, but one that he's made before and one that looked like it was going in. It was a kind of a tough fadeaway from 10, 12 feet. He misses it. UVA comes down, scores. So all of a sudden it went from what could have been an 8-point game to a 4-point game. And in my mind, you know, if you're up eight, the crowd's still going wild. UNC has a lot of confidence. Now all of a sudden the crowd's been taken out of it. UVA has a confidence, only down four. If UNC misses, now a chance to cut that lead some more. And, you know, I'm always one to kind of point to one turning point in the game at times, whether that's right or wrong. I do enjoy doing it. And for me, that was what I had written down at the time. And, you know, I think that could have definitely helped UNC out if they had been able to get that lead to eight. You know, another thing was Naz Little got hurt early on. For the most part, he had been playing pretty well going into the game. I think he had started to really find his role. Had 10 points against Miami, 12 against NC State. So, you know, he was kind of, I think, finding that he was more of a you know, coming in, playing the stretch four, being able to attack the basket in limited dribbles, getting offensive rebounds, crashing the glass, using his size. And when he came in, I immediately thought, man, he is going to really struggle because UVA was going to cut off the paint. He wasn't going to get into the lane. They're going to keep him off the boards. And his first shot, dribble, 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 pull up deep, deep jump shot, misses. But then he gets hurt. And looking back on it, I don't think it would have had any impact on the first half. But I think in the second half, with the game opening up, that he could have had some driving lanes or some cuts to the rim that would have proved important for UNC. Not to mention, they only had one guy playing off the bench. Brandon Robinson had 18 minutes. Playtech had three, and Seth Woods had three. Didn't play at all the second half. You know, once again, that wasn't a Seventh Woods type of game with UVA's stingy defense. But now UVA, you know, they could have been with three losses in the ACC, but now sit at 9-2. I mean, you have Ty Jerome, Kyle Guy, DeAndre Hunter, kind of the big three. Jack Salt knows his role, great screen setter, can rebound, takes up a lot of size. And then you really have Tony Bennett having some options. He can go with Clark, which he did to start the game, and kind of offer a little quickness and ball pressure. But then you can also bring Mamadi off the bench or in the starting lineup. He had four shot blocks. He's probably one of the quickest players off of 2 feet there is in college basketball, and he certainly made an impact around the rim. And then you had Jay Huff, who only scored 2 points, but it was a big 2 points. And shout out to Rob Harrington for really being ahead of the curve on him and thinking that he would make an impact down the road, because he certainly had his moment. So you had a very entertaining game in Chapel Hill, and it ended up with Duke on top. But that kind of leads into really just this week of basketball. A lot of finally good basketball. There's been a lot of, I'd say, mediocre play in a lot of the conferences. So finally, a lot of the top teams are matching up. And, you know, right now, it's an upset. Penn State winning at home. I haven't been the biggest Michigan fan, and kind of was going off on them a few weeks ago when they're undefeated, and they're still 11-2, about to be 11-3, and big Big Ten play, but I think easily beatable and prime for kind of a first or second round upset. You have a surprising Kansas State team winning at Texas right now. They're looking like a potential favorite in the conference. Kansas hung on for dear life on Monday, coming in that evening slot after UNC getting taken to overtime by TCU. And TCU really struggled down the stretch with their free throw shooting. But freshman Devon Dotson, he came up clutch, having one of his best games, scoring 25 points, putting together 10 rebounds for a guy that's listed at 6'2", but definitely is not 6'2", and while he had 6 turnovers, had 5 assists. But they snuck out of there with the win and the cover in Texas. And then you had another huge upset today, which was the LSU-Kentucky game. I think you could bill this one the Battle of Cashbacks. So obviously PayPal Cal and kind of the recruits he gets is well known since the John Wall, Boogie Cousins days. But now LSU is starting to catch up in Will Wade's short tenure, and they definitely have a plethora of talent, young talent, that is, with Shaman Hoop's favorite to go with Marcus Howard of Tremont Waters, and then Naz Reid, Javante Smart, Emmett Williams, and then you have Bigby Williams from Oregon. And lo and behold, they go into Rupp Arena, 9-point underdogs, and they shocked the world with a tip-in at 71-71 to get them a two-point win. Waters really struggled shooting the ball, had 15. Overall, balanced effort. I mean, LSU was 6 of 21 from the three-point line, but Kentucky was 5 of 19, with Tyler Herro making two of those. And once again, Talked about it a few times on this podcast before, but point guard play is what is really killing the Wildcats right now. Ashton Hagans, really great defender, really quick. Thought he had turned the corner a few weeks ago, only 4 points today, 103 offensive rating. And then you have Emmanuel Quickly, 3 points, a 46 offensive rating. So not the best one, but that kind of leads into what I would say is really going to be the game of the weekend. You have Tennessee, number one ranked Tennessee, only ranked number five in KenPom. But they're going into their biggest game of the year at Rupp Arena. KenPom has them losing 74-72, but definitely should be some great matchups with junior Jordan Bone. And then you have, you know, the undersized, strong big guys with Admiral Schofield and Grant Williams, and then Kyle Alexander as well. So I think there should be a lot of intriguing matchups in that one, especially going against PJ Washington, who continues to score 20 plus points a game. And I'd say he's, you know, definitely, you know, could make a big statement of trying to get in the very top conversation of SEC Player of the Year. Last few games, 20 points, 23, 20, 15, 26, 20, 21. And he's putting up almost double-digit rebounds each time. So I think for a guy that was, you know, highly touted from, you know, really playing EYBL as a freshman and highly touted as a freshman last year, he's really, really coming into his own and kind of being the go-to guy for the Wildcats. So definitely a lot of strong games this week and a lot of fun games this weekend as well. So kind of switching gears a little bit, one segment I like to do is the buy-sell, and I've gone through a decent amount of teams. One team, I know they've almost fallen out of the top 25, but they still rank number 10 in KenPom, and I know they're doing this without you know, without their stud point guard, but Virginia Tech is once again definitely a sell. They've gotten crushed by both Virginia and North Carolina in their games. Only scored 47 against NC State. Granted, they held them to 24, and then they lost to Louisville and Clemson in back-to-back games. Should have an easy win tomorrow against Georgia Tech. So that's going to be an easy sell. But I'm going to go to two teams that don't really get a whole lot of attention from myself or the national media, and we'll start with Nevada, who is 23-1. They have one loss to New Mexico, which happened at the beginning of the month, and they're coming off a rematch at home in New Mexico, who you know, for a Midwest team is no slouch. They have a lot of players that I'm sure people will remember from other schools. You have Carlton Bragg, former five-star recruit of Kansas and then ASU. You have Corey Manigault from Pittsburgh, former team takeover, DC Maryland guy. And then you have Vance Jackson, who played with, he was kind of the young guy playing with Tyler Dorsey and Daniel Hamilton out in California. And, you know, he's a 6'9 shooter, started at UConn, still only a sophomore. So they definitely have some talent, but Nevada beat them almost by 30 points. So Nevada is definitely a talented team, easily, you know, probably older than most NBA teams. I think, you know, their average experience is number two in KenPom, and they have Jordan Caroline, who's a power, you know, power kind of, I'd say a four, but whether it's a zone, you know, loves to catch the ball right around the free throw line and attack left. And he's definitely put on some pounds since his days at Montverde, but he's been playing extremely well and shooting 44% from beyond the three. So I'm sure he could easily turn into kind of a two-way contract or a strong European guy next year. And then you have the Martin brothers, formerly of NC State, definitely made their name last year in the tournament. They've been playing extremely well. And then you can kind of go down the line of Trey Porter, 6'11", really long, really athletic, coming from Old Dominion. And he's been been rebounding extremely well on both sides. Gets to the foul line, has been, you know, shooting 65%, so not great, but much better than 50%. You know, McDonald's All-American Jordan Brown, who hasn't really done much of anything yet, but he's coming off the bench. And then you have another guy, Jazz Johnson, a 5'10 Portland transfer. He's shooting 43% from behind the arc. Trayshon Thurman, 6'8 guy. And then you have Corey Henson, who is probably one of those guys that should have stayed at Wagner, where he was playing extremely well and probably could have put himself in contention for kind of a, you know, maybe a Portsmouth invitational invite, you know, or a pretty decent overseas contract. But instead, he's only been playing 13 minutes. And, you know, last year he averaged 14 and a half points at Wagner, which probably could have picked up this year. So a lot of talent on the team, but having seen them in person against USC, was not overly impressed with them. You know, I think once again, they kind of point guard is their weak spot. And while they do have talent, I think they'll definitely be prime for a potential first round exit early on. I think they could have Sweet 16 potential, just given their experience last year. But I am going to sell on Nevada and skip over Houston, who's 23-1 and definitely a team I want to talk about next week. But I'm going to go down to the Southern Conference and Wofford, that sits at 21-4, number 29 in KenPom. And really their four losses: opening game of the year, open with UNC, and I thought it was going to be more competitive than it was, but they lost to UNC 78-67, lost to Oklahoma, lost to Kansas, lost to Mississippi State. But since then, they're undefeated in conference play. UNC Greensboro, they beat by 30 points on the road early on before getting them at home next week. They beat Furman at home, Furman who upset Villanova. And once, just going back to UNC Greensboro, Wes Miller and the team that almost upset Gonzaga last year. And they have really two main studs that is kind of all you need to create a little March Madness buzz. And big guy Cameron Jackson, that's a very efficient big guy with 117 offensive rating, one of the top offensive rebounders in the country. He's number 8 in offensive rebounding percentage. And then you have Fletcher McGee, legitimately one of the, you know, the best or one of the top shooters in the country. He's already hit 91 threes on the year. His 3-point percentage is down after shooting 43%, but he's shooting a whopping 95% from the free throw line. And this is a team that I'm going to buy, and I could easily, not that they're going to be the Loyola Illinois, but could easily see them turning into something in the tournament. So that brings us to one of the final segments right now. So really have, you know, about 3 weeks left in conference play, and want to take a look at really who could be the freshman of the year in some of the major conferences. I think in the ACC, for example, that one is already decided. That is going to be Zion Williamson, as well as player of the year right now in conference play. He's and edging out teammate RJ Barrett at 23.5 points per game, leading in blocks at 2.2 and second rebounds at 9.2. His PER is kind of out of this world, especially compared to his other freshmen as well as anybody else. It's whopping 39.7, which is, if you think an average player is 15, the next closest freshman is Kobe White with a 22. And normally in any year, Kobe White would probably be getting a lot of love given his play. He's averaging 18.4 points in conference play, and really the reins have been turned over to him by Roy Williams. And the big question for him coming into the year was, can he play point guard? Not saying that he couldn't, but he was known as such a devastating scorer in high school and AAU and USA that would this hurt him? And it obviously hasn't. And he's been having an amazing season and kind of been the one and done player that UNC has been looking for some time. Of course, everybody thought that would be Naz Little, and he's had his ups and downs. So this one's an easy call with Zion Williamson, but really a talented ACC group with, you can go Zion, RJ, Kobe, you know, Cam Reddish, Xavier Johnson from Pittsburgh, another Bishop O'Connell guy. And then, I mean, you still have Naz Little coming off the bench, Trey Jones, and definitely some other players. So very strong, strong crew in the ACC. And you definitely see a drop off when you get to the Big East. You know, there's, I wouldn't say any stud one and done freshman, but the guy who I would give it to right now is Mac McClung. And, you know, behind Zion, he was probably the player that received the most attention in the social media landscape last year, just given his exploits. But he has been playing extremely well this year. He's averaging over 15 points per game in conference play. So he's, you know, he's been scoring very well, averaging 3 assists. You know, not shooting the ball great, 31% from the floor, but also getting 4 rebounds. And I think, you know, the guy right behind him is James Akinjo, who is probably one of the quickest guards in college this year. And once again, is another Georgetown guy, and they're sitting, you know, in the Big East at 5-6, and they've had some tough losses, losing at home to Butler in a close one, and then giving away a game early in the year to St. John's in overtime. You know, had Marquette close, had Creighton close. So they've had a lot of close games, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, Cam Patrick Ewing in, you know, his second season. Can he use this to really in season 3 and 4, get the Hoyas back to the NCAA tournament, or will this just kind of be a flash in the pan and these guys don't really improve as much as everybody is expecting, especially if there's a decent amount of hype on them going into next season. So not the strongest crop of freshmen in the Big East, but for Georgetown, they definitely, you know, especially their fans have room to be looking forward to the next few years. Moving over to the Big Ten, this one is a little difficult. I mean, you definitely have some talented ones. You have Romeo Langford, who's leading the conference in scoring, 17.5, or leading the conference for freshmen, 17.5. But really, Indiana has struggled. And then, you know, a guy who I really like is Jalen Smith, Jalen Stick Smith. He is a second leading rebounder for Maryland, who has been playing, you know, as a team, they've been playing very well through Big Ten play. And, you know, from a PER standpoint, he is just a shade below Romeo Langford. So I think it'll be interesting to see how that one shakes out. I wouldn't be surprised if Romeo pulls away in that one. Big 12, I think you have a two-player race. You have the efficient Jackson Hayes, who is killing everybody in PER with a 27.9 and a ridiculous 150 offensive rating. I think you also have Devon Dotson, who, especially as you know, Kansas goes, it seems like he's kind of taking over the reins. He's averaging 13.2 points and is the leader in assists as well, not to mention steals. So I think you have a two-person race in that one, and should be one to watch down the road. And just staying on Kansas for a quick second, once again, I know we talked about them. This beat TCU, but it's really the play of, I'm going to mispronounce the name, but Ochai Agbaji, who has kind of come on out of the blue. And originally Bill Self thought he was going to redshirt as a freshman and wasn't even ranked in the top 100, but he had 20 points against TCU, 23 against Oklahoma State, shooting 40% from behind the 3-point line, and definitely could fill in while Vic is out, and I think be a really really kind of a star freshman and long-term player for the Jayhawks. So just moving on quickly, we'll go to the Southeastern Conference. I think this one would have been Darius Garland in a lock, but he was obviously hurt early on. So this one's going to go to Naz Reid, who's averaging 15.5 points per game and 6.8 rebounds. Definitely wasn't a huge fan of him, seeing him at USA basketball camp back in the day, but his sleepy nature has kind of proven everybody wrong, including myself so far. And then finally you go to the Pac-12, and there's actually a lot of talent in the Pac-12, but I think Louis King, CJ Ellaby from Washington State has been playing extremely well, but Louis King and Timmy Allen from Utah, I think, are my top two. King leads it in scoring at a little under 16, and Timmy comes in at 14, but averaging 6.6 boards and really strong on blocks. So we'll definitely talk more about them down the road, but I think it should be a fun debate over the next few weeks, especially for the conferences that are still trying to figure everything out, minus the ACC. So that kind of leads me into the final segment. Last night I was able to read an article on The Athletic, and unfortunately can't get into it right now, but it was basically an oral history on Klay Thompson at Washington State. And it was a pretty interesting read from his teammates. A few quotes from Tony Bennett and one of the assistants at the time when they really recruited him back in, I think, the 2008 timeframe. And, you know, Klay played there for 3 years and just kind of what a homebody he was. All I want to do is play video games and play basketball. I don't think there's much else to do in Pullman, Washington, but definitely a good in-depth read. And I would say that was my favorite national piece of the week. So with that, we have Duke down pretty significantly right now. I think they're just down around 20. So unfortunately, can anyone beat Duke was answered pretty quickly. But with that, I think it was just a natural letdown game. Still the favorites for the tournament, but finally glad to have college basketball back in rare form. And I think over the next few weeks, as March Madness comes, there should be a lot of highly competitive and very entertaining games with Kentucky and Tennessee this week. So thank you very much for putting up with me as I chatted, hopefully somewhat interesting over the last 30, 45 minutes. And we'll hopefully have some more entertaining guests on going forward. Scott Phillips from NBC Sports, Mikey V, and some others coming up. And we'll be chatting with you next week.